Welcome to the Beautifully Broken Podcast. I'm your host, Freddie Kimmel, and on the show, we explore the survivor's journey, practitioners making a difference, and the therapeutic treatments and transformational technology that allow the body to heal itself. Witness the inspiration we gain by navigating the human experience with grace, humility, and a healthy dose of mistakes. Because part of being human is being beautifully broken. Through my healing journey, I've become increasingly aware of the way environmental toxicity affects my body. In the past, I've tested high for mercury, lead, cadmium, glyphosate, and mycotoxins from mold. I've experienced this as fatigue, full body neuralgia, and brain fog. And after years of conventional treatments with limited results, I knew I needed to ask different questions if I wanted a different answer. Now, around this time, I was introduced to the Ion Cleanse by AMD at an integrative wellness symposium. I came across a technology where people put their feet in water, and over the next 20 to 30 minutes, ions were released into the water that assists the body's natural ability to release toxins. As you can imagine, I was very, very skeptical, but after my first session, I felt clear-headed, lighter, and a little bit high, and I was intrigued enough to invest in a unit. My N equals one experiment, I've watched levels of most environmental toxicity fall by almost 30% after 4 months. Now, this is a friend favorite, and as people come over to my home, they ask, Freddie, can I please do a foot bath? This is a heart-centered company, the support is amazing, and they offer a 60-day, 100% money-back guarantee. The Ion Cleanse by AMD is a safe, non-invasive way to help the body detox naturally, and it's trusted by the Beautifully Broken Podcast. So reach out to Glenn at AMD today and see if it's a good fit for your home or your wellness clinic. Visit their site for more details at www.amajordifference.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Beautifully Broken Podcast. If you're new here, I'm your host, Freddie Kimmel, and I'll sum this up in a 30-second elevator pitch. I am someone who at 28 years old went through metastatic cancer and Lyme disease and toxic mold and heavy metal toxicity and about five different surgeries. I use that experience to seek fringe wellness techniques, including transformational technology, supplementation, spirituality, fasting, all the things. And I've taken all that information and life experience, and I've put it into this podcast, which is the Beautifully Broken Podcast. And we examine transformational technology and the hero's journey and experts in the field and all the things to upgrade your biology, however we do that. So you've reached me at number 100. If you're new, if you're a subscribed listener and you've been with me, I got my hand on my heart and I'm saying a heartfelt thank you. Sink into that for a second. A heartfelt thank you. It's hard not to do a 100th episode and not think about the heart. As I approach this show, this milestone, I think about living vibrantly to 100. For me, that's quality over quantity. For me, that's energy in the tank. It's groceries on my own. It's driving to the store at 100. It's getting up off the toilet at 100. That, to me, is vital force. So, in my field of study surrounding energetics, we often examine the theories around cellular voltage or even the different millivoltage potentials held by each cell that it's reported to hold. Now, this may be a new concept that the cell is a battery capable of holding charge, and the science is very compelling. In fact, it's been my personal experience with dis-ease and chronic illness that mitochondrial support and energetic reserves are some of the most important considerations to make when we're looking at finding wellness. This has opened the door on some of the most profound insights in anti-aging and living to 100. And I have found that the overlap between dis-ease and anti-aging is very common and usually leaves clues. So we're going to go there a little bit and explore this on this episode. So one example is scientist Otto Warburg, and he won the Nobel Prize in 1931, I believe. One of his passions was examining the bioenergetics of cancer cells and how they're characterized by a high rate of aerobic glycolysis and suppression of mitochondrial metabolism. Freddie, you just lost me. All that means is a cell would use sugar metabolism as opposed to oxygen for energy. So in general, 95% of the total ATP, that's adenosine triphosphate, or it's just the currency of energy of a cell, is produced by mitochondrial oxidative phosphorylation. That's oxygen. It uses oxygen for energy. In contrast, in a cell that is cancerous, it uses glycolysis or sugar metabolism, and it's estimated to be responsible for 50 to 70% of ATP production. The net is there's a much lower yield of energy in that cancer cell. It's like 2 molecules of ATP versus 38 molecules of ATP the healthy way. So as I said, there's overlap. And in one of my favorite books, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, if you read this, you're never going to look at sugar the same way again. And there's a reason why this is important. Cancer will stop you from living to 100. So another area that Otto Warburg looked at was the voltage, the transmembrane potential, the energy potential of a cell. And he saw that healthy cells had a TMP or transmembrane potential of 70 to 90 millivolts or higher. At this voltage, cells were charged. They're healthy. They could repel each other like positive little batteries. Imagine trying to push two batteries together, the positive ends, and they repel. That makes space. And so you've seen these live blood cell microscopy images of red blood cells, and they're just floating down the capillaries of the body healthy. However, stress and bad diet, impure water, lack of sleep, emotional issues, poor environmental conditions can cause a drop in voltage. If the voltage drops below 50 millivolts, a person can start to feel ill or experience chronic fatigue or other dis-ease symptoms. If the voltage drops to 15 millivolts or lower, it's because a cell is cancerous. Now, we're thinking about this transmembrane potential and voltage, and I want to talk a little bit about pH. Now, we think about pH as acidity or alkaline, but pH is actually the power of hydrogen or potential hydrogen. And the National Institute of Standard of Technology has defined pH values in terms of electromotive force existing between certain electrodes in a specific solution, that the principle is not excluded just to a cell. pH is, in my mind, synonymous with voltage. So I can explain this. So the exception to this rule about voltage, we talked about those three cells, the healthy cells, 70 to 90, the stress cells or experiencing a little imbalance is 50 millivolts, the cancerous cell below 15 millivolts. The exception is the heart. And the heart holds a voltage or transmembrane potential of 120 to 140 millivolts. So he used this example to paint the picture of how much energy a heart has moving through it. And how many times have we heard of cancer of the heart? It's very rare. And I use this guideline that healing can be a story of voltage. So examining the heart and its strong electrical potential, and this is where things get weird. In my head, I think of the heart as this energetic force driving blood and oxygen and nutrients through the body. And in every storybook I've ever read, when I think about death, it's the heart stops. It ceases to beat to drive life. And as I started to study this, how do we optimize the heart? How do we optimize the heart for living to 100? I found some crazy data out there. As I began to study the heart's role in providing life, I came across the definition of heart failure or the lack thereof. The European Heart Journal guidelines from 2018 stated that no definitions of heart failure are satisfactory. So a commonly used one is heart failure is a pathology state in which an abnormality of cardiac function is responsible for the failure of the heart to pump blood at a rate to reach or satisfy the requirements of the metabolizing tissue. The very next sentence, however, says a simple objective definition of chronic heart failure is currently impossible. That is a head scratcher to me. Why does the European Heart Journal guideline, very recent, in the last 2 years, say an objective definition of chronic heart failure is impossible? So the most recent American College of Cardiology Foundation and the American Heart Association guidelines defines heart failure as a complex clinical syndrome that results from any structural or functional impairment of the ventricular filling or ejection of blood. That was a very interesting phrase to me, ventricular filling or ejection of blood. So while pumping is implied, the broader description may suggest an evolutionary direction away from the simplistic model. Clinically repeated experiments have showed, and this is, again, this gets really weird, has shown in animals who died of asphyxiation, residual circulation continues up to 2 hours after cardiac arrest. Additional research shows 20 to 40% increase in canine cardiac output after occlusion of the thoracic aorta. You're telling me that there's more blood moving through the body, up 20 to 40% more. And put a pin in this, because we're going to go back here, after occlusion of the thoracic aorta. So what does that mean? So in digging into this, what is heart failure? Because we need the heart to live to 100. We need the heart to have an energetic charge. We need that high millivoltage. Looking at the body of work of Rudolf Steiner, Bronco First, and more recently, Thomas Cowan, including research bodies and educational research centers like the Steiner Research Center, the Department of Anesthesiology at Albany Medical, the Department of Medicine, University of Minnesota, and Emerson College in the UK, are doing a deep dive on what the heart does and what it doesn't do. So according to Steiner, the heart's primary role is the circulation of the blood through its rhythmic pulsations. It's systole and distole. It's systolic and diastolic actions. So that's pumping and contracting. The heart responds to what takes place in the circulation of the blood. It is the blood that drives the heart and not the other way around. The heart doesn't pump the blood. The blood pumps the heart. Okay, so that's from Rudolf Steiner. Let's examine why this is possible. And I know you're thinking the same thing. This is idiotic. Why am I still listening to this podcast? And I have some great points here. So most of these points are derived from a paper called The Heart is Not a Pump, a refutation of the pressure propulsion premise of the heart function. So number one, key points. The heart does not speed the movement of the blood. It exits the heart at the same speed it returns. The heart does not speed the movement of the blood. It exits the heart at the same speed it returns. So if it didn't make the blood go faster, what did it do to the blood? Now, if you'll know anything about what the blood does, delivering nutrients and oxygen to cells, it can't go flying past the cells. There's an exchange. The blood then actually pools and it stops in the capillaries. In the example that Dr. Thomas Cowan offers is that a bus is going from New York to San Francisco and it stops at St. Louis for people to get off. And then it continues its journey with no engine in the bus because there's no other hearts throughout the body. Point number two is the pressure propulsion phenomenon. Blood vessels circle the earth 3 times. If we took all our blood vessels and stretched them out end to end, they'd go around the earth 3 times. If we did side to side, they would fill up an NFL football field. So the blood from the heart is a long, long push. That is sticky fluid with red blood cells and platelets. And this pressure propulsion phenomenon, sending life around the earth 3 times, the amount of pressure is 10,000 times that of what the heart exhibits. The design or the muscular layers of the heart, sometimes it's very thick, sometimes it's almost an inch thick. Other layers are just 1 or 2 cell layers thick where you could push your finger through it. Now, from an engineering standpoint, that's a severe design flaw. So the pressure of a heart to have a pumping action and to drive blood 3 times around the earth with one pump isn't possible from the current pressure that exists. Point number three would be like the kink in the garden hose case. So the outflow tube, so your heart, imagine it comes into the right, goes out the left, right? Very simplistic view. The outflow tube of the left ventricle is called the aortic arch. And if you put dye in the blood, we can see the blood leave the heart. It shoots up and around that aortic arch. A little shoots up to the brain, and then it comes out of that left aortic arch. With dye, we can see that the blood comes out of the contracted left ventricle up and around. However, during systolic pressure, that phase of the heartbeat when the heart muscle contracts and pumps blood, the aortic arch bends in instead of straightens out. Let that land for a second. When it's at maximum pressure, the arch bends in. Now, if you had a garden hose, and imagine you're going to build the pressure up, and you open up the valve, and you got to shoot water around the earth 3 times, but you kinked the garden hose at high volume, wouldn't the hose straighten out to blow that blood away? Can you imagine kinking the hose? It wouldn't do the job. It wouldn't do the ask of what you're requesting. And it doesn't make any sense because you've got this viscous, sticky fluid with all these platelets and red blood cells sending blood back around all the way through the body to the heart. And remember, we said the blood exits the heart the same speed as it re-enters. I know. The case for the heart being a pump is getting demolished here. So I guess the question is, what does the heart do? And Rudolf Steiner theorizes that the heart is a hydraulic ram. So that's a dam. And I had to study this like five times to understand it. And then a containment vessel behind the dam. And you can look this up in engineering charts. And the water would come into a containment unit. There would be positive pressure on the incoming side, negative vacuum on the negative side. And when the differential gets so high, the gate opens the left ventricle and the blood is sucked out and it goes up to the brain and around to the body. In that left ventricle, the blood is pulled into a vortex. It stops and it pulls into a vortex and spins and it structures the blood. If you've ever seen my Instagram, you'll often see me spinning my water in a glass carafe with a magnet, and I'm vortexing the water to add energy and life because I believe, from my research and studies, that vortexing water adds energies. Now, ancient civilizations say where the blood stops in the heart, this is where the soul enters the body. And this is just where my head goes. I have this weird concept. Every time that blood stops, it's like there's an energetic force or life entering your body. Can you imagine through each pass of the vortex that there's this stream of consciousness that our consciousness is broadcast from somewhere else? It's like Sirius Radio when I drive around Austin and the signal's going in and out. Just because the signal goes out, it doesn't mean the radio's dead. You know, the song's still there. There's just an interrupt in the pattern. And what a fascinating way to think about life, that I'm this streaming consciousness. Anyways, that fills me with extreme gratitude. And anyways, it's an idea. It's a theory. And I guess I would say, why does the blood move, right? If not from a pumping action, if we've got this hydrophilic dam. So as early as 1932, scientists filmed the blood in a very early embryo, circulating in self-propelled mode in spiraling streams before the heart's functioning. And they're so impressed in this instance by the spiraling nature of the blood, they really failed to realize the phenomenon that they had demolished this pressure propulsion principle. So that's from an evolutionary standpoint, or looking at the embryo developing, you can't grow past many cells without a circulatory system. And the heart really doesn't function until week 5.5, week 6 from what I read. But we've got this evidentiary proof of blood flowing and pumping around the embryo without a heart. So Switzerland medical research has pointed out the heart was not a pump forcing inert blood to move with pressure, but the blood was propelled by its own biological momentum. And that can be seen in an embryo and boosts itself with inertia. So to move forward to the concept of what may be happening to create life, we can look at the work of Gerald Pollack in the fourth phase of water. So remember, from a molecular view, you are 98% molecular water. So its properties will have a profound effect on your biology and your chemistry. We always downplay the role of water, in my experience. It's so important. In structured water or exclusion zone water, I said this before, vortex water is actually H3O2. It's a newly discovered phase of water. And if you count the number of hydrogens and oxygens, you found out it's not H2O. This water has movement energy and its structure resembles a gel phase and has an incredible energy potential. This is how water exists in nature, in rivers and streams, in little eddies as it vortexes and spins around rocks in a river and in trees. And think about redwoods, hundreds and hundreds of feet tall with circulatory systems and no heart, but the ability to create and circulate water to its extremities. So the existence of exclusion zone water, or easy water, is a layer of water in which plastic microspheres are repelled from each other, from hydrophilic surfaces. And there's a unique energy that's been proven by multiple scientific bodies. We can look this up. You can see amazing videos on YouTube where Pollack will take these two cups of water and just fill them right to the brim. And the surface tension between the two cups is this energetic charge. And as you move the cups away, you get this ridiculous bridge where this water, it looks like you're spreading apart this like a jelly-like surface. The water doesn't want to let go of itself. there's movement to it. You can see it bridging these glasses. So that is the idea or the theory that the blood has these, I think, that, and we're going to quote this again, this biological movement to it because it is structured. Structured water forms in the interaction of water and water-loving surfaces. And this is the movement it creates. And the heart may just be an orchestrator of the energy of the world coming in as it structures healing. So for me, the concept of disease or what heart failure is, it changes. Is the heart simply feedback? Is the heart the ultimate biofeedback system from the organs? And as the body fails to perform from depression or metal toxicity or fatigue or malnourishment of the tissues, the heart responds. Is it really high blood pressure or is disease the compensation strategy? It's why your heart is beating very fast after you've run up a flight of stairs. The increase in heart rate is a response to the need of the cells for oxygen. So the scientist Barber clarifies this paradigm shift by clearly articulating what the heart does do. It listens. Its primary role is a sensory organ, and it acts like a conductor, controlling the rhythms of cellular management. The scientific process might call this maintaining homeostasis. The idea that the heart serves at the pleasures of the cells and not the other way around. I often paint this picture of an orchestra, this full body orchestra in which all organs and organ systems are communicating. And this sure does make a great case for it. And I promise I'll loop this back. I'll loop everything in. So I've had the luxury of working with a system that looks at HRV and what different rhythms of the heart offer for feedback on wellness. And this is why my mind is blown. So for 7 to 8 months, I've scanned hundreds of people. And what I see are an incredible array of repeating patterns, usually linked to personality types. I can look at a heart rate pattern now or scan, and I can see where 300 heartbeats are divided into different frequency bands, and I can know that's an entrepreneur. I can know that person trends toward depression. I can know that person's in chronic fatigue just by looking at the picture of how the heartbeats are divided into three different frequency bands. I don't even need to ask them questions. So I'm seeing this in software that is trackable and very, very consistent. So heart rate variability, or HRV, is the physiological phenomenon of the variation in time between heartbeats. Heart rate variability is the measurement of the conversation occurring between the heart and the brain and their ability to regulate the needs of the body through the autonomic nervous system. Heart rate variability enables great insight into cardiovascular adaptation, neurohumoral regulation, and psychoemotional stress. When these autonomic and regulatory systems are functioning at peak potential, the body is better able to heal and function. A healthy HRV is reflected by many variations in the time between successive heartbeats and indicates a robust autonomic nervous system. Someone with less variation in between beats may be experiencing a decrease in autonomic nervous system regulation. So what all that says to me is that the case for the heart orchestrating energy from the blood, transmission from the cells, the nervous system is creating an ask in each individual beat what it needs. And that's been reflected from my experience by using this software. The system is called actually HRV VScan for you tech nerds out there. And that's something that you can get on ampcoil.com. It's a system that measures the time in between heartbeats, as well as our beneficial brainwave states. And what I've seen from this system is the incredible information and insight that our heartbeats offer us. And the idea that the heart isn't a pump, that it's actually the heart center. It's this emotional root. I feel that in my heart. I can feel when I'm anxious. I don't feel it in my brain. I feel it in my heart. When you go through heartbreak, I don't feel that in my brain. I feel that in my heart. When I go through extreme joy or elation from singing a song, my heart is what's lit up. I can feel that. I know you're going to tell me all my emotions are in our brain. I'm going to tell you from my N equals one experiment that's right in the middle of my chest. And life is energy. When we have enough energy, the body knows what to do. In abundance reserve of energy, robust mitochondrial function, or ATP production, or millivoltage, the body heals. It's an autoregulatory body that is reflected by the variation of time in between heartbeats. And we have simple, easy, at-home software to track this. So for me, I get really excited about that empowerment piece. I get really excited that I know my emotions, my ability to trend towards relaxation, to use meditation, to use all these biohacks and life skills to maintain balance. It's like you've got all the power in the world. I know we always want to boil it down. In this show, we want to boil it down to the mold or the toxin or the metal or the pathogen. The more I experience and the more I learn, the stronger case there is for the emotional component in the body. And working with our systems, working with the heart, taking ownership and responsibility for my looping thoughts. I feel like that's why programs like Dr. Gupta's or Annie Hopper, which work with the limbic brain and repatterning our response to triggers like mold and Lyme, have such great success. I think that's why energetic tools and frequency and sound therapy from systems like bioresonance or amp coil have such great success, because sound touches us on such a deep, profound spiritual layer. I think these things are interrupting the pattern. And it's what you do with that little improvement or information. This is all about designing the life you want to live. And with new levels of awareness, with new information, when things you have immediate access to, breathwork, cold showers, feet on the ground, fasting, gratitude journaling, immediate access to all these things. But I'm a perfect example of someone who will wait to use them. Sometimes you're not ready to do the work. Sometimes you're not ready to hear that it can be really simple. Not always. I mean, my journey was anything less but simple. In conclusion, we are so powerful and we are scratching the surface of what we're capable of as human beings. I had a profound experience yesterday where I was, again, in this state of a little bit of anxiety. I'm late on recording this episode. It's my day off. I'm tired. And I ended up pulling up a track on YouTube and I started to sing. And I had this energetic explosion. That's the best way I could say it. Moved through my heart, where I started to feel this flood of warmth over my body. And it all moved through my heart. Something very profound shifted when I started to sing. It was a reminder that if we look at the periodic table, we can look at it as elements, then we can realize the density of each element is a different vibration or oscillating pattern. That vibration is just a note. It's a song. All of a sudden, the periodic table starts to look like a piano. And I think this is where we're going. This is where we're going. Frequency, vibration, sound, awareness. I am going to close it down here on episode 100. I love you guys. I'm so happy you're taking the time to do this journey with me. And I hope you find value in this podcast. If you do, share it with a loved one. That is the episode. That is 100. It's been an awesome journey. I pray that I get to do 100 more. And I will not only take that word, those words of reverence, I'll say those words, but I'm also going to apply action, because the universe hears both those things when they're applied together in my experience. And we're going to close it out with a little song. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. Freddie, love ya. Namaste. One of the consistent biohacks in my home is red light therapy, or photobiomodulation, if you want to sound fancy at a dinner party. Now, red lights have been clinically shown to help with a plethora of health benefits, including increased energy, better circulation, increased testosterone production, workout recovery, hair growth, and even help with fine lines and wrinkles on your skin. There are even multiple studies showing benefits with Alzheimer's patients. Personally, this is something I recommend for most of my clients to have in their home for its incredible benefits and relatively low cost. Now, from my research, LightPath LED continues to innovate their designs, and they include multiple wave panels and pulsing. With this initial research showing a greater depth of penetration and benefit to mitochondrial health, which, if you're a fan of the podcast, you know this is the moving target when it comes to wellness. Mind the mitochondria. So check out lightpathled.com and use code BEAUTIFULLYBROKEN, all lowercase, for a 10% discount in the checkout. The inventor and founder, Scott Kennedy, is a true gem of a human being and stands behind every light that he sells. This is a Beautifully Broken podcast, stamp of approval, 5 stars. My friends, you made it to the end of the podcast, and here we are in season 3. I think our relationship is developing into something really special. So there are 2 ways to support this show. The first is by joining my membership program at buymeacoffee.com/FreddieSetGo. Here you'll get early access to all the podcasts, bonus episodes, video clips, discounted coaching, and free webinars with thought leaders in the wellness and transformational technology industry. It's a chance to take your listening experience and put it into action. The second way is to support the podcast through FreddieSetGo.com and download the Beautifully Broken Buyer's Guide. This is my new ebook, which is a collection of transformational technology, supplements, and courses that have worked for me, my clients, and my family. These are things that I've found to be incredibly helpful in my healing journey, and I put them all in one book. Most of them offer significant discounts just by clicking the link or using the discount code. And please know they don't cost you anything extra. And at the same time, they support the podcast through affiliations. My heart thanks you for tuning in. I'm so glad you're here with us. If you've enjoyed today's show, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. And if you want to connect with me directly, I'm on Instagram at FreddieSetGo or buymeacoffee.com/FreddieSetGo. Last message from my vast team of lawyers that I pay a lot of money for. The information on this podcast is for educational purposes only. By listening, you agree not to use the information found here as medical advice to treat any medical condition in yourself, your family members, or others. Always consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having challenges with. That's it for today. Our closing, the world is changing. We need you at your very best. So take the steps today to always be upgrading. Remember, while life is pain, putting the fractured pieces back together is a beautiful process. I love you. I'm your host, Freddie Kimmel. Namaste.